Nyland, Sean Campbell, Mitch Melnick until 7 o'clock. Corey Pronman of The Athletic on the NHL Draft coming up this weekend in about half an hour. How you doing, Pierre?
I'm good. I have to give you a quick Rick Tocchet story, though. Is that okay?
Of course.
Well, we got Rick in a trade from Philadelphia. It was a big three-way deal, Pittsburgh, Philadelphia, and L.A. And Rick had one home game to play, and then we went on the road. And ironically, it was to Montreal. But in those days, U.S. Air didn't have a direct flight from Pittsburgh to Montreal, and we only flew commercial. So we went Pittsburgh, Syracuse, Syracuse, Montreal. Not kidding. Chris probably knows that flight. Anyways, he comes up to me when we land in Syracuse, and he goes, do you think I can get an advance of my per diem? And Scotty didn't like to hear out all the per diem if it was like a 4 or 5 game trip. He'd only do it 2 or 3 games at a time. So I go, why? He goes, well, I kind of got cleaned out in cards. I go, Rick, it's only a 30-minute flight. He goes, yeah, I know. These guys are good.
How much was the per diem back then?
I think it was 65.
65 U.S.?
Something like that. Yeah.
What year was that?
That would have been 91, 92.
Yeah, because I don't recall getting 65 a day.
So you got less than 60. Yeah. What is it today?
92 was my last year. So, I was probably just getting into that.
Any idea what it is today, Pierre?
Is it a hundo today?
It's 100 and a bit, I think.
Yeah.
A little over 100.
What did you do with your per diem, Chris? Seriously.
I spent it. You know, we go out to dinner, stuff like that, a few beers after the game. You know, a lot of guys save. Nevin Marquardt still has his meal money.
Nevin Marquardt?
Yeah, the guy from Boston. I'm not kidding you.
I remember Nevin Marquardt. Yeah, he was a tough dude.
And he would eat at McDonald's.
Yeah,
on the road.
Well, I know a lot of ball players would do that.
Yeah, yeah, like cheap it out. Like, unbelievable. In his whole NHL career, he wore the same suits he wore in junior. Brutal.
A little bit more about Max Domi from his former coach.
Well, I'll tell you what. First of all, I had to sometimes on the bench to settle him down because if somebody took liberties, I mean, he's a small guy. He would look at me and goes, you want me to take care of it? I'm like, Max, just play hockey.
Jeez. And he did go on to say, much like his dad Ty told us yesterday, Pierre, that the message to Max Domi is that he's got to shoot more often.
Well, that's why I told you yesterday he needs to play with a centerman that's a give-and-go guy. Because if he does that, that's his thing. His best hockey that he ever played was the World Junior. It was absolutely the best hockey ever played, and it was with Sammy Reinhart and Anthony Duclair. It's the best hockey he's ever played. And that was the biggest part of it, and that's why I told you what I told you yesterday. He's a gunner. He's not a playmaker. He's a gunner.
Do you think, I mean, there are fans who are trying to, you know, as soon as you mention the name Duclair and the success they had, and he's been up and down with a couple of teams already. I mean, I think they have priorities above and beyond that, but do you think that makes sense?
Well, no, because Anthony's a winger, too. The guy that really, Reinhart's the guy that was kind of the engine in the middle. He's, you know, a crafty playmaker, not super fast, but a crafty playmaker. Maybe potentially down the road. And you got to remember, Duclair and Jonathan Drouin were teammates with Lac St. Louis when they played for Johnny Goyen. So there's another tie in there if Montreal wants some free info. We'll see. I think they got to worry about other things first before they worry about Anthony Duclair.
All right, let's get to that.
I just want to stick on Domi for 2 seconds.
Yeah, well, that's...
Okay. Today with Rick Tocchet, he did say that near the end of the year, he started using Max Domi as a center. And he does believe he can play at center, that he has the assets to play the 200-foot game.
That's for sure. I would agree with that. But I think at the end, don't get caught up in fool's gold. When teams are dead and buried in the standings, guys play a little bit different. They play looser. They have some fun. It's not nearly as intense. I'm not a big proponent of getting fooled by fool's gold at the end of a season with non-playoff teams.
Pierre, that's a good point. Pierre, you have stated before, the last time, in fact, that Mark Bergevin had the third overall pick, that you would have traded it, correct?
I would have explored every option to trade it for live fire NHL players because there was no organizational depth at center. And I told them in the meeting... The last meeting that I had with Michael Ann Lauer, Jeff Molson, Kevin Gilmore, and Serge Savard. They asked me, what would you do with the third pick overall? I said, I'd really explore trading it.
Now, we don't know, but there's all kinds of rumors, as you know, at this time of year before the draft, flying around involving Ryan O'Reilly. Would it make sense to you for Bergevin to trade the third overall pick in a deal involving Ryan O'Reilly?
Tell you what, you're playing a dangerous game there because Buffalo's starting to stockpile early picks. They're in your division. I'm not sure I'd be in a rush to do that with Buffalo because they're going to get, obviously, Rasmus Dahlin. They already have Rasmus Ristolainen, and they already have Jake McCabe. They already have Jack Eichel. They're starting to stockpile stuff there. And so if you give them the third overall pick, let's just say it's Brady Tkachuk, or let's say it's Svechnikov, you're giving them a ton of artillery. I'm not sure I'd want to do that if I were Montreal for one player that's a lot older. Not sure I'd want to do that.
Pierre, if they don't want to trade the number three, but they want to get another pick in the top 10, I know that you mentioned yesterday the amount of teams that have multiple picks like the Islanders, the Red Wings. But what about a team like Vancouver and their pick at 7? It seems like there's a lot of talk that they're willing to give up that pick for the right price.
Well, I think they want to see one of the things they're concerned about in their marketplace with the Sedins retiring. They're concerned about, I think, apathy starting to kick into their fan base. There's so much to do out there that if the Canucks aren't really on the front page, and yeah, they've got some good young players, Brock Besser being one of them, but I think they're concerned if they don't start to get going here, there's going to be apathy in their marketplace, and that becomes a problem, big problem. So there might be an appetite to trade, but it would have to be a really good player, I think, if I'm Vancouver.
So, Pierre, you know, I heard you on this show, obviously, saying that you would pick Tkachuk if you had the third pick over Zadina. When you look at the problems this team has, scoring goals like they do, the possibility of Pacioretty leaving, and yes, they don't have any sentiment, I like the idea of Tkachuk, but I think it's too much of a risk for this general manager to go there.
Why is it a risk? I'm just curious.
Well, not so much on the player, but just looking down the road as far as goals. This team needs to score goals, and I know Zadina has him in junior, and he's got to prove it at this level and all that, but, you know, Tkachuk doesn't translate into that right away. I get what he brings, but and I'm not saying Zadina will, but they need goals, this team.
Well, let me ask Pierre, right. flat out, Brady Tkachuk, who played against much older players this year, at his best, if he progresses the way you expect him to progress, in addition to everything else that he would bring to a team, what would he, in your opinion, top out at goal wise?
He can be a I don't know about goals, but he could be a 60 to 70 point player. I think that's pretty good. You know, I don't know how to divide it up between the goals and the assists. I mean, he's going to go through another learning curve. I don't think he's NHL ready next year. Zadina might be. Chris is making a good point about the offense that's needed. But again, I'll stress, with a winger, you can be the best goal scorer in the world. If you don't have guys getting you the puck in really fertile situations, a lot of that goal scoring goes away in the NHL. I was breaking down tape last night with a friend of mine who played at Harvard. You might know him, Chris. Alan Litchfield. Remember that name?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
He was a rough and tough customer, and we were watching tape yesterday on different players. And, you know, that's the one thing that's changed over time. It's so hard to be a winger if you don't have a centerman in the league that can get you the puck today. It's really tough to score.
Well, that's why I say we heard the name Kotkaniemi, all right? I think it's too far to drop from 3 to try and get this guy or take him at 3 because you need a centerman, and he's not coming here next year. I don't think any of these players they have here now, and even if they put Drouin back to the wing, will do what Pacioretty did here without a legitimate number one sentiment.
We agree. We totally agree. You asked Mitch Melnick what I told him before the season started last year. I don't think Drouin will get to 25 goals, and he didn't. I'm just telling you, I spend more time watching those teams practice than most people, and I could tell you just based on what I saw in practice and what I saw in games, I didn't think it translated 25 goals for Montreal last year, and it didn't.
I want you to listen to Trevor Timmons with Tony Marinaro earlier today on the Montreal Forum, Pierre, okay? You're going to hear Trevor Timmons. Tony asked him about, well, three of the guys we've been talking about here.
Brady grew up, you know, around the NHL and around the culture, being in the dressing NHL dressing room, so he knows what the NHL is all about. Sometimes that allows for a faster transition to the NHL game. He knows what to expect. Yes, Zadina is a goal scorer. Yes, we put him on the draft board according to his asset value with a scoring winger along with everybody else. So, I mean, the rest, that's above and beyond me. I think people don't know the fact that he did have an ACL surgery not too long ago, over a year ago. So that's been checked out, and he's fully healthy and bigger, stronger, and maturing as a man. And it only got better throughout the course of the season, non-issue.
All right. Now, obviously, a little bit out of context, but talking specifically about Brady Tkachuk, Filip Zadina, and in response to some people questioning Kotkaniemi's skating, his pace revealed that he had surgery and is now 100% healthy. You want to pick up? Can you read anything into what he said and how he said it, or you'd need to hear the whole conversation?
No. I'm just going to take the sound bites because I think that's fair. They obviously respect the goal scoring of Zadina. They obviously know Kokinemi's a very skillful center iceman that maybe has to grow into his pace, which he will. Chris correctly said he won't be in the NHL next year. He won't. But there's a little heartwarming, tear-jerking kind of thing when he talks about Brady Tkachuk. Because the transition, when you're playing in college hockey, it's different than playing junior hockey. It's just different because you're playing against a lot older players. You're not playing as many games, but you're playing against older guys. And they whack you around pretty good. The hits are pretty savage. I just think you could hear him warming up to Tkachuk because he says the transition will be easier. He's not wrong on that. He's not wrong on that at all. See, the one thing I like about Brady Tkachuk, just to take it another step, because Chris was asking a good question, the difference between Zadina and Tkachuk. If Tkachuk stops scoring for you, he can still help influence the outcome of a game. I don't know if Zadina can.
Kind of like Pacioretty. Zadina.
If he's not scoring,
you're having a tough time. Yeah, he may kill penalties, but he ain't going to block shots. You know, so you're getting the same type of player.
If you're a hockey fan, a Canadiens fan listening to this right now, I would implore you, and you missed Trevor Timmons from this morning, I would implore you to listen to the whole interview because it's 20 minutes. You're not going to get that anywhere else, not at the Canadiens website, not at the scrum on Thursday, because Tony pinned him down. And I got to say, this could just be smokescreen and I could be way off. But he did not sound at all like someone who was in love with Zadina. Not at all. Whether that means he was boosting Tkachuk or Kotkaniemi, and I can't go there. And it could, again, be disinformation and smokescreen, but it did not sound... And it's also not Trevor Timmons' decision. It's Bergeron's decision, I guess.
Well,
that's
what he said. It's above me.
Yes.
But when he said it's above me, it's obvious what he means. But I'm curious why you are saying that.
Because he emphasized their own board. And Tony mentioned Zadina. He's the third best skater. He's number three. No, our own board over and over. I would just implore you to listen to it, and you may come to a different conclusion.
Is that the same conclusion you came to,
yes,
Sean?
Yes, I did not get a feeling that they were taking Zadina.
Warm and fuzzy. Yeah.
But that, like, again, that could be just something that they're thinking of moving the pick, so they want other teams to hear that, and they want other teams to go, maybe we could get something to move up to number three to get Zadina.
We know that they had lunch with Brady Tkachuk. Did they have lunch with Zadina? Do we know? We know.
I'm sure they did. They had lunch with more, probably 7 to 10 guys, and they may have had some of these kids into Montreal. Some teams bring kids in for second and third visits. So, one of the best ones is Nazem Kadri. When the draft was in Montreal, his draft year, he was supposed to meet with the Florida Panthers, and he didn't have a phone number to get in touch with them. So I was in the lobby, and we're talking because I knew him from the World Junior. I knew him from the London Knights, and we're talking. And I said, are you supposed to be somewhere? And he goes, yeah, I'm supposed to be meeting Florida, but nobody's here to meet me. So I called up somebody that I knew that worked for the Panthers, and I said, you got Nazem Kadri down here in the lobby, and he goes, oh, well, we've already spoken to him, but we'll send somebody down soon. Now you know why some teams do. Now it's totally different management, so to be fair, it was a different group. But now you know why some teams do well and other teams don't do well.
Well, we put through combines, we put through 155 players. On top of that, some players, for some reason or other, couldn't come to a combine. We make sure we interview those players. Plus, you know, our area scouts interview more than just the players that are on our draft board. So I'd say there's well over 225 interviews that have been done.
Okay, those are interviews.
That's what I'm talking about.
But I'm talking about a lunch. A lunch is different than an interview, right?
Yeah, seven to ten. I bet you they had 7 to 10 guys where they've either had dinner or lunch with them, maybe even more.
Pierre, if the Canadians decide not to go with the center Kotkaniemi at number 3, and they were interested in someone else in the first round. I know that there's Barrett Hayton, Joe Valeno's name gets brought up a lot. I'm very curious about Rasmus Kupari and your thoughts on him.
I'm so looking forward to watching more of him. The one thing I would tell you about this, the draft after 5 and 6, it starts to get different. I'm higher on maybe some other kids than that, but I don't want to disparage a young player who's going into his draft. I'm higher on other guys than him. How's that?
Yeah, it's like Tony also had Joe Valeno on today, right? And he fluctuates wildly depending on who you talk to, and it's a little uncomfortable. If you're a teenager, and you hear somebody saying, you know, like it's a bad thing that he's going to go late in the first round or in the second round as opposed to a top 10 or top 15. There's nothing wrong with that, but we kind of make it into something wrong.
Well, some people do. I don't. Chris Nyland, were you the last picker?
Pierre, I was 231 out of 234. Yeah.
I think he was Mr. Irrelevant. I really do.
I was
one of the last guys picked. Yeah.
And I was happy.
And you had a heck of a career.
No, but I was happy to be Mr. Irrelevant because, you know what? I was just happy to be drafted. I didn't realize that, you know, a 17th round pick is a brutal place to be picked. At the time, I was so naive to the draft, you know?
I agree with you, and that's my point is that I look at the career that you had and how valuable you were for a lot of years for some really good teams. And so to me, it doesn't matter where you get picked. It matters who picks you and how they develop you. And then, I tell my son all the time, how bad do you want to do it? Because, you know, everybody thinks, oh, you get drafted, you're going to make it. No, that's just when the fun starts. Because you should see some of the kids I'm working with now, what they're going through every day in the summer, because they want to make it. They want to make it bad. And they pay an amazing toll to do this, far greater than when I was doing it or Chris was doing it. The toll is unbelievably deep to dig to. It really is.
Final question for you from, once again, Trevor Timmons this morning on the Montreal Forum with Tony Marinaro.
We'll reevaluate the draft board, make some final adjustments. Pro scouts and our general manager and management team, you know, they've got work to do, and there's always moving parts leading up to until we make that 3rd overall pick.
All the best to you and the Montreal Canadiens on Friday night. Enjoy.
Okay.
My headset just came out. You want me to decipher what he just said? You want me to read the tea leaves there?
Yes.
When he brings up pro scouts, when he's talking about the amateur draft, that's different. This isn't a pro scouting day unless you're making trades. The draft is a day to celebrate the work of all your amateur scouts. It is their one game day. The first round is their one game day, and then they get a real long day the next day to put it all together with the second round through the 8th round or the 9th round. But if you're what I just heard him say, the pro scouts get involved as well, that's telling me something else is going on.
By the way, Tony has weighed in, and he said that Timmons said that he had supper with 3 players. Tkachuk was one, Kotkaniemi was the other, and he did not name the 3rd player. That was from Tony Marino.
So he doesn't want you to know that it wasn't Zadina in case it wasn't Zadina. All right, Pierre, thanks an awful lot. The plot thickens.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'll be talking to you from Dallas tomorrow. I'm looking forward to that, and I'm looking forward to seeing Mitch Gallo. Hope you use a sunscreen.
Does he?
He doesn't. He doesn't need it.
He'll have a base in Aruba for 2 weeks.
He doesn't need it.
As long as he wears a shirt in Dallas, because he hasn't been wearing a shirt in Aruba.
Yeah, make sure. Yeah, make sure he's on the draft floor with a shirt on, Pierre. Please.
Okay. Yeah. See you later.
Talk to you tomorrow.
See ya.